This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Stafford lines up under center, first down and 10, takes the snap, play action fake, blitz coming, it's picked up, Stafford going deep, got Nacua open, makes the catch, inside the 20, and down to the 16, Matthew Stafford with a deep shot, and Nacua pulls it in.
Ryan Radke on Westwood One. That was actually one of the biggest plays of the night in a game that featured zero touchdowns. Rams win 12-6, field goals for everybody. Welcome to the show, Maggie and Perloff. So, the Rams find a way to win this game after a really sloppy first half by both teams because the rain was just coming in sideways. And then it dries out a little bit in the second half. And listen, it's not like the Rams. This did not look like last week against Buffalo by any stretch. So yeah. I guess credit the 49ers defense for keeping them in the game. But the 49ers offense was so anemic, they could not take advantage of even some of the Rams' miscues.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if the Rams had lost this game, it would have been a disaster because they were the team that was getting down to the red zone, getting close. You got to give the Rams a little bit of credit, too. They run the ball really well. We think of Stafford, but, man, they control the clock. Do a really good job because every time it's first down and they run it to Kyren Williams and it's like he gets 3-4 yards. Yeah. I think that's like what good offenses do. They really control the game. The Niners had looked great the first quarter. Didn't look like the old Niners when the defense was running around and hitting people and the Rams had to punt. That was
five
like
straight punts to start the game for the
an
Rams.
Incredible glimpse of the old 49ers defense, and then poof, just went away.
Went away, and poof, the season went away.
Yep.
And that's how quickly it's easy come, easy go in the NFL. But here's the thing about the 49ers. Yeah, I say poof, the season's gone, but this has been drip, 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 steadily. It just felt like all the news, if there was ever news that was coming out of the 49ers, it always felt like it was bad. You know, it was either someone was getting injured, someone was dealing with something in their personal life that was really tragic. Even on the field, you know, blowing fourth quarter leads to division rivals and not being able to play well in the elements, players upset with targets like Deebo Samuel. Everything that possibly could go wrong kind of did for the 49ers in a Super Bowl hangover year. It almost played out like to the T and even more so.
Well, yeah, absolutely. The fact that they were panicking about whether Isaac Garendo could suit up, that's not a good sign, Maggie, considering no one on earth knew who Isaac Garendo was until he suited up. They could play anyone a running back and then have them be good. It's just, I think you and I have disagreed about this all show. I think it's like you can't look beyond the injuries. Whether the injuries are part of the Super Bowl hangover, that I could totally see what you're saying. But generally, no team could survive these injuries. So everybody's going to look bad. The players are going to look bad. The coaching staff's going to look bad. The quarterback's going to look bad. You just can't lose this many guys and be the same team.
And when we say Super Bowl hangover, obviously we mean Super Bowl loss. The hangover is so much worse.
But let me ask you this question. Part of the reason is they played so long in the last year that they wore down. Is the same thing true with the Chiefs? They've had two straight Super Bowl runs.
And to be honest, the Chiefs don't really look the same now, do they?
Is it possible?
They found ways to win. I saw the stat about the Chiefs, just to take a left turn to them for just one quick second. So they're 12-1, but they have a plus 56-point differential, which is the lowest of any of the, I believe, 26 teams that have started 12-1, and that came from Mike Sando of The Athletic. It kind of feels like it. But back to the 49ers. This is going to be one of those things that's almost like so many things have gone wrong for the 49ers this year. You're going to be able to take your pick on what do you think it was? Is it just as simple as the injuries? Is it the off-season contract holdouts and stuff that killed it? Is the off-season tragic stuff that happened with some players' families and also with Ricky Pearsall, who thankfully is fine after being held up in broad daylight and shot? You're going to be, is it shuffling of more assistant coaches and more coordinators? Like, is it Brock Purdy coming back down to earth? Is it Brock Purdy not being elite or special? Is it Debo being, you know, at the end of his career? So many things went wrong. I think you're going to have a lot of different people who will point to different things. The actual answer is it all went wrong.
I feel like there's a clear ranking. I think it's Nick Bosa being dinged up, number one. Trent Williams being dinged up, number two. And then it doesn't seem, and then maybe Debo losing a step, number three. But I mean, those are three. Remember last year they went on a little losing streak because Trent Williams and Debo were
hurt.
That
was early in the season.
They were able to overcome. Halfway through, right? Early they were good. Yeah, they both got him back healthy. I'm just saying, like, when those guys are not on the field, like, that's very, you could point very specifically to wins and losses. And I don't think Bosa has really been himself. I think he has stretches, but you could still see him, if you watch closely, he definitely, like, always is looking at it, the lower right side of his ab. So I just think that is specific injuries, especially Trent Williams. I mean, what's their record without him? I'll bet you could point to exactly where their offense falls off when he's not on the field.
Well, I mean, but then at the same time, like, he was a contract holdout all season long.
Yeah, very true.
You knew that maybe he wouldn't be,
and he's old,
himself. 855-212-4227. All right, you've heard from us. Let's hear from you. George has been very patient, wants to get in and get his opinion in on the Rams. Good morning, George. What's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. My opinion, the 49ers window is rapidly closing. The Rams are the future in the Seahawks. The Rams have 16 rookies on a 53-man roster, which is pretty impressive. They're getting better. The fourth quarter last night, they dominated 49ers defensive line. They haven't done that in years. The 49ers, to me, the window's closing. I think it's the coaching. I think Shanahan has burnt out slightly. It's just my opinion, and that's just my opinion. You guys have a wonderful day.
You know, it's funny.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, George. Maggie, you said the same thing. You think Shanahan might be getting in the end of his rope. He does look a little haggard on the sideline.
I got to be honest. When we found out last night that Devondre Campbell, who came over as a free agent from the Packers, just up and walked off the field during the game because I guess he was so hurt that he or ticked off that he was demoted on the depth chart because Dre Greenlaw came back, that he was asked to play and they said no. I'm like, Kyle Shanahan must be like, are you kidding me? This season that we've been going through where the entire year we feel like we've been on life support, this dude's going to pull a selfish move now in a must-win game?
Yeah, is he a core player, though, to this group?
It doesn't matter.
And also, does Shanahan even know the defensive players' names?
Well, Leland is in Sacramento, big 49er fan. How you feeling, Leland?
Good morning. Morning, guys. Disappointing day to, you know, wake up and face and have to face the music. 49ers had opportunities to win the game. They just couldn't close it. And then when you zoom out and look at the bigger picture, I think, Andrew, you talked about Debo Samuel. You know, we've been talking about him all year long. And the 49ers, they kind of set a tone, the brass did, way in the beginning of the year by caving in to these players that are past their prime, extending their contracts, giving him way too much guaranteed money. And then Devondre Campbell, it's his turn to act up and act like a diva, and they set themselves up for it.
So, Leland, what would you do? What would you do this offseason? You're talking tough. Are you cutting people? Or what are you doing?
Oh, man, I could only dream what I would do. Andrew, I would rebuild. You know, I'm just a little flea on the sideline that likes to call into your show and watch. But John Lynch has to make some big moves. They got to get rid of these old guys. Trent Williams is not a prime player anymore. I'm sorry. He needs to go. Takes up way too much money on the salary cap. Debo Samuel, you know, I think we agree on him. He needs to go. But the 49ers, you know what? They'll probably cave into him and keep him around another year. How about Brock Purdy? Brock Purdy, I would give him a one-year deal. Pay him some pretty good money for a year and tell him, Brock, if you can sling it and bring it, we'll bring it back for two or three more years. But I think he's just too small of a guy. He can't make that deep pass. How about that pass to Ricky Pearsall in the fourth quarter, underthrew him? That could have been a TD. I don't know. There's so many things that went wrong this year. You know, we could nitpick for an hour. What do you guys think?
Listen, Leland, you just gave me an idea. We've been talking about Brock Purdy, and we've been asking you who has more question marks around them in terms of their future in San Francisco. Is it Kyle Shanahan or is it Brock Purdy? And I don't think he would do this, because I bet his agents would argue, you know, he's deserved more. But do you remember what the Packers did with Jordan Love?
Well, that was right. They were facing the last year of his deal.
So they just option.
Yeah, they sort of just rewrote his last year.
And added another year onto that. And then, obviously, he had a massive year, and then he got a huge, huge deal, like $200 million.
But Love hadn't done nearly as much as Purdy at that point.
Exactly. So that's I think this is going to be tough. I think Brock Purdy's looking at $50 million.
Okay, well, at least you're $10 million off of Dak. You're getting in the right direction.
Okay, I'm sorry, $60 million.
Oh, yeah, but $50 million, that's a backup pay in the NFL. Listen, no, I'm just kidding, but that's nothing. Like, they'd be happy to get away with that. I think that, okay, so we come to a consensus show. No more Debo. Leland wants to get rid of Trent Williams. But you're still bringing back so many high-priced, big-time guys. You're still bringing back 10 Pro Bowl players. So, like, why would you? I'll put a future bet on the Niners. Like, why wouldn't they be back next year? The year after 2020, when everybody got injured, they were 10-7 and almost got to the Super Bowl. Like, why can't that happen again? There's just so many good players there. Like, you're telling me that Ayuk can't come back healthy and be on one side, and Pearsall and Juwan Jennings and Kittle, and then that defense with all that crazy talent, those cornerbacks? Like, why can't they be good again? I don't understand.
Well, they've got some things to clean up. Sean's in Oregon. Hey, Sean.
Hey, you guys. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I've been seeing this since last year at the Super Bowl. You know, Shanahan, a lot of this is on him. You know, they lost the Super Bowl by 3 points, and then 3 days later, they fire Steve Wilks, a defensive coordinator, who's been a head coach, and he's been on defenses and gone to the Super Bowl before. I mean, this guy was a good guy. And then they put a guy, Nick Sorensen, who's only been an assistant, never been a coordinator at any level. And they think this is just going, just no problem. Nobody even notices that.
Well, here's the thing. Perloff thought that Steve Wilks was the problem. I'm not going to speak for you, Perloff, but...
Yeah, I mean, their defense statistically is better this year than it was under him, and they had everybody was hurt. So I don't know. I think they're both kind of like... I mean, Sean, like, the defense used to punish other teams. Neither with Wilks or Sorensen. It's just sort of there right now.
I just think it's weird how that kind of coincides. You know, I haven't looked in depth in this a lot, but on the first one, I always look at, like, just basic changes that change something else. I'm like, well, look at what happened here.
Right.
And, I was just scratching my head. I wonder what the other players were thinking. When they probably didn't even, like, did they have a vote on whether they wanted the guy gone? Like, 3 days later after they lose the Super Bowl, here our coordinator's gone after we almost won the Super Bowl? I mean, this is crazy.
And to be fair, Sean, if we're talking about injuries and how Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy should make it passes this year because the injuries have obviously impacted them, Dre Greenlaw literally tore his Achilles tendon in the middle of the game. That's a massive defensive player to lose in the middle of the Super Bowl. Maybe his injury changes the outcome of that game. Maybe he makes a big play.
I do. I get the logic, though. I mean, listen, they were the number one defense basically 2 or 3 years in a row. Then Steve Wilks comes in, they fall to 8. Now this year they're back up to 3. Like, they should be a top 3 defense. And Wilks, they definitely fell off last year. Remember, the Lions scored 31 points in the playoffs.
So if they're a top 3 defense, and yeah. I know the secondary was
just
really
numerically
good. Right. If they're a top 3 defense, though, then how do you not put any of the blame at Kyle Shanahan? Because
I touch on another subject real quick?
Yeah, go ahead. What's up?
I want to touch on Bill Belichick.
Okay, wait, hold on one second. Let me make this point about Kyle Shanahan, then I'll let you do it. If they actually have a defense that is representative, and they were good last night, and they've been good this year, then you got to put more of the blame on Shanahan.
Yeah, but McCaffrey was gone, and Debo is stunk, and Ayuk was gone, and Trent Williams is out, and they're terrible without Trent Williams.
You've got your quarterback. You've got a shot.
You don't have your left tackle, though. Most teams struggle in that spot.
I think that's given a pass.
Stubborn.
Okay, Sean, what do you want to say about Belichick?
Well, I want to say, you know, everyone talks about how he's the best of all time. Well, you know what? I mean, I look at Bill Belichick, the best of all time, and they talk about wins, and winning's the most important thing. Well, the best coach of all time doesn't screw up an undefeated season. You know,
Sean, are you serious?
The best coach of all time, the best coach of all time doesn't lose five Super Bowls. He would have lost as many Super Bowls as he won if Russell Wilson didn't throw that interception.
Yeah, but it was because Belichick pointed out to the team what Russell Wilson, where he was going to be throwing this ball, that Malcolm Butler was even in position to make the play.
Nobody in leadership in NFL teams believes he's the best of all time. They're not going to hire him at this age. A hiring process is a real pain to go through. Nobody wants to go through it. So if he's the best of all time, let's see what he does at this age. Go get him, Grandpa.
Have a great day, guys. See you, Sean. Have a good weekend.
But you know the funny thing about Brady and Belichick, like, it came down to, and I'm not even blaming or crediting Belichick, like the Julian Edelman catch against Atlanta and the play you just mentioned, the Malcolm Butler interception. On the other hand, David Tyree caught a ball off his helmet after Eli was in the grass. That could have been. So it's amazing. All these close Super Bowls could have gone one way or the other.
But the Super Bowl, I don't judge a team by how much they won or lost a Super Bowl by. That's a game where it's pass-fail. You either win it or you lose it.
Well, I think, no, but the reality is the Patriots were in all these close Super Bowls. They won some, they lost some. I think the big issue with Belichick is Brady's success without him. I mean, that's the one thing that the possible thing, not that he lost that undefeated season. Although, that being said, like, they probably should have won that game. That was not an A effort by the Pats.
I don't know if it was effort. I just happen to think that the Giants' defensive line, now we're talking about just Super Bowls from a long time ago, but the Giants' defensive line, they just had the guys. It was a little like your Philadelphia Eagles when they matched up against the Patriots and won. Like, they beat Bill Belichick with a backup quarterback, but that's just because their defense, even though Tom Brady threw for a lot of yards in that game, the defense closed it out.
The Eagles' defense?
I know they let up a lot of passing yards, but it was the Brandon Graham sack at the end of Brady that really closed the game.
Well, it was totally desperate. The Patriots had like 30 seconds to get the whole length of the field. Oh, no, the Brandon Graham. But regardless, though, they let up 33 points. That was not a defense. I do think if the Patriots in 2007 played the Giants 10 times, they would have won 9 of those games. They really, I'm sure they were kicking themselves out. They had an amazing team that year.
Yeah, you blow out a team in the Super Bowl, good for you. You know, Cowboys against my Buffalo Bills, Ravens, you know, against the Giants, these really lopsided Super Bowls. But I don't judge like, oh, because they barely won, because you needed Adam Vinatieri to kick game-winning field goals, you know, the Rams, the Carolina Panthers. I don't think that takes away from Belichick. You're in the Super Bowl. Of course it's going to be hard. It should be hard. That should be a close game if you have the best team from each conference.
But Sean mentioned also he lost some Super Bowls too.
He did. You know,
it's kind of like the Michael Jordan-LeBron debate a little bit. A
little bit. I also think that, you know, Tom Brady, whatever you want to say about Peyton Manning and Ben Roethlisberger, there were other good quarterbacks, not in his division, never in the AFC East, but in the AFC, there were other all-time quarterbacks that he had to face.
Omaha!
And Belichick had to scheme up to beat those guys. You're beating Peyton Manning.
Yeah, but I mean, Tom Brady's better than him.
Tom Brady is better than him, but Bill Belichick is designing defenses to try to stop Peyton Manning and Ben Roethlisberger and some of these other no doubt first ballot Hall of Fame guys.
True. I mean, obviously Belichick's
Philip Rivers.
Awesome.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no. I don't agree with Sean's point exactly on the close Super Bowls, but I do think that the age thing, Sean did nail it. I think 72 is the real reason here. If Bill Belichick was 62, there'd be a line of 12 teams lining up to sign him. That's what's going on here. That's not fair necessarily, but has there ever been a 70? How many times has a 70-something-year-old coach been hired as the first hire? Not very many.
855-212-4227. All right, you're welcome, Twain. We'll give you our favorite moments from the Belichick press conference from yesterday, by the way, because there were a couple moments. Oh, man. And, of course, you can answer our question. Who do you have more questions about as far as their future is concerned with the 49ers? Is it Kyle Shanahan? Is it Brock Purdy? Both were not very good last night. It's M&P.
All right, welcome back. Maggie and Perloff show. Bill Belichick is now officially the head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels. So bizarre. It's going to take about, he'll probably be gone back to the NFL by the time I wrap my head around this entire situation. But it seemed like everyone was in a good mood yesterday in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, you know, Belichick was working hard to come across as being, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Likeable? Really, you know, the guy who was being condescending with the media, stiff-arming the media, it was all smiles yesterday or whatever. However close Bill Belichick can get to a smile, it always looks like he's staring into the sun. But I thought my favorite moment was Belichick was asked about how hands-on he's going to be with recruiting high school players, and this is what he said.
Well, look, I think the recruiting process belongs to everyone. It belongs to Michael and his scouting staff and evaluations and setting that up in the recruiting department in terms of, you know, making this an attractive visitor or destination for the athlete. But it's also part of the coaching job, and certainly the head coach has a big role in that as well.
Okay. Looks like I'm going to read the MRI.
The part I liked was they said, are you actually going to go into living rooms? And are you really going to go in, talk to mom and dad in the living room? And he was said, he can't wait to do that. He can't wait. Yeah. Not like a Bart Scott can't wait, but like this will be fun for him to go sit down with Johnny's mom and dad to talk about how he's going to help get him to the pros.
Yeah, it's funny. It's going to be easy to recruit against him because if he's recruiting a 17-year-old kid, aren't all the other coaches going to say, well, how long do you think you're going to play with this guy?
See, I don't think that's a problem because players only basically play any place for a year.
Well, right. But if you're getting an incoming freshman, you better hope he doesn't leave in a year. Like, I don't know. I feel like he's going to go all transfer portal and this is going to be all the best team money can buy, right? Like, recruiting is not a big factor here. And if it is, he's definitely going to be in trouble because you need time to develop those recruits. Like, look at Marcus Freeman in Notre Dame. It took a little time. He got those great classes and a little time to get it going.
Yeah, I think there's a different expectation in this era of college football. And the expectation is your team is always recruiting you in some ways because they either recruit you out of high school or they recruit you in the transfer portal or they're recruiting you to not go into the transfer portal. So I think you're kind of hoping you stay for 2 years.
Right.
Maybe 3. None of this feels long term, even if you're a 17-year-old.
Yeah, maybe so. But I do think it's a totally guy. I don't think Bill Belichick and Mike Lombardi have any interest in high school seniors right now because I think they need to win immediately. So they're going to be like Dion and just go probably 60 transfers or something crazy like that.
That'd be nuts. Eric is in Boise, wants to talk about Bill Belichick. Hey, Eric.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So, got a take on Belichick. I think he's just an average coach. Take his record, take Tom Brady games out of it, and Lawrence Taylor games out of it. What's his record?
Eric, wow. You watched the first 3 Super Bowls, did you not?
I did.
Okay. Who do you think was more responsible for those Super Bowls? Was it Tom Brady or Bill Belichick?
I think it's Tom Brady.
The first 3, Eric.
Well, actually.
Tom Brady.
But technically, the answer is Adam Vinatieri. But
Brady was pretty good against the Panthers, and he's pretty good against the Eagles.
He had the year that Tom Brady blew his knee out, that was his best coaching year without a superstar quarterback or a superstar defensive player. So that's the one year that you point to. Since Tom Brady, record speaks for itself. Between the LT years and the Patriot years, record speaks for itself. He's not a great coach.
Oh my gosh, Eric.
I'm not saying he's not a bad coach, but he's not this elite, you know, can win with everybody, win anywhere. I give this North Carolina thing 2 seasons.
Man, Eric, well, listen, you might be right that he might not be there very long, but that's just, I feel like I cannot stand for that kind of slander. I get you. You had the all-time great quarterback. You have the all-time great linebacker in Lawrence Taylor. I understand that. But there are other teams who could have had those guys and would not have won. Because you have to develop the rest of the team. And it's going to be shocking, and people are going to look into it about, and we have talked about it, who are the Hall of Famers who Tom Brady played with on offense besides Randy Moss? That actually would have been Hall of Famers without coming to the Patriots.
Wait, is this a pro-Brady argument you're making or a pro-Belichick argument?
It's a pro-Belichick argument. It's not like these were all-star teams up and down the roster.
He did win 1-2 Bowl with Corey Dillon, right? Or am I making that?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's Pro Bowl. I mean, he's a possible
Hall of Famer. I kind of got him off the trash heap at that point.
I mean, but
No, I mean, let's face it. Come on. Bill Belichick's, he's basically an average coach.
This is like a nuts.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Way too far in the other to the other side of the spectrum on this.
It is kind of funny. He better be pretty good at North Carolina, or that's not going to look good. I mean, we'll probably forget it because everyone keeps bringing up Bill Walsh went back to Stanford and was 500 and nobody cares. But there's bizarre pressure on North Carolina right now. Like,
definitely.
Because you look at the ACC, like if you can walk and chew gum, you should be 9-3 in that conference. So I think that his schedule is so ludicrous next year. Like he's got to win all these games. He can't lose to like the Wake Forest of the, and that's possible.
Andrew Bogish has headlines for us. What's up, Bogues? Got more Belichick for us?
I do, actually, because if I could learn a few things to our good friend Manny, there was once a year called 1980, Manny.
Oh, is that right?
It was the year I was born.
Good
it
gosh.
It was the year of the Miracle on Ice.
You are ancient, aren't you?
It was also the last year that North Carolina won the ACC.
Oh.
That's where Bill Belichick takes over.
I believe we're going to run a good program and have a good team. So we'll see where all that goes.
Rah-rah, sis, boom-bah. We'll see where all that goes. Belichick, by the way, getting $10 million for his coaching staff. That's double what Mac Brown got for his assistants. And the school says it'll share $13 million a year in revenue with players for Bill Belichick.
I just looked up the top movie in 1980. Do you know what it was?
Ooh, let me guess. That was the year that Raging Bull was, I think.
Titanic.
1980?
No, the Titanic actually sank in 1980, if in Manny's view of history.
right after World War One ended.
I have no idea.
The Red Sox winning the World Series.
That too, yeah. They sold Babe Ruth in the spring of 79.
1980, Empire Strikes Back.
Ah, yeah.
$200 million in 1980.
Makes sense.
Bogish, back to you.
I barely got started last hour on the wonderful Joshua Cardi. 4 field goals on a soggy Thursday night football. The last 3 coming in the fourth quarter as the Rams came from behind for a 12-6 win over the Niners. Here's Cardi's head coach, Sean McVay.
He's steady. He's consistent. He's kind of unflappable. And he went out there, and I mean, even the long one, the 48-yarder, I mean, he knocked that thing true, and it was firm and had great trajectory on it. And then the next 3 were excellent.
All those 3 came in the fourth. They were all under 30 yards. McVay's team has now won 7 of 9 to climb within a half game of first place in the NFC West. And then there are the Niners, who have now dropped 4 of 5 and who have added new drama to this disaster we've been discussing all morning. Linebacker Devondre Campbell was in full uniform last night but refused to play, eventually walking off the field as the third quarter ended. George Kittle trying to understand how that happens.
People are going through random things off the field. I can't speak on that. You know, whatever, you know, his decision was, it wasn't for this organization. It wasn't for this team. And no, that's on him.
Kyle Shanahan would not say postgame that Campbell will lose his job for this, but said they don't need to talk about him anymore. The Dolphins are reportedly divorcing Odell Beckham Jr. after just 9 catches this season. The split is apparently mutual. Back on the college coaching front, UNLV has hired former Florida coach Dan Mullen to replace Barry Odom, who left for Purdue. And 2 nights before winning the Heisman, Travis Hunter cleaned up at the annual College Football Awards show last night. Hunter taking home the Walter Camp Player of the Year, plus the Bednarik Award as Best Defender and the Biletnikoff Award as the Best Receiver.
Is that good? Yeah, is that? That
it's
sounds good.
Good. That never happened good. Before.
Yeah, okay.
I guess we know who Bogish bet on for the Heisman.
America is betting on him.
Wait, what are this is a... Maggie, you said something interesting. Like, I don't even need to watch it anymore. Like, I wish there was a little bit more drama.
It's in seasons like this, it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
As Bronny James was scoring 30 in a G League game yesterday, Dad was not with the Lakers as they left for Minnesota. LeBron is out tonight after being excused from Wednesday's practice for personal reasons. Now, he could return Sunday in Memphis and gotten a week off, or he could wait until next Thursday night and take a nice 10-12-day break here in the middle of the season.
I can't tell with this story. Like, are we not covering this enough? Are we not making enough of a big deal? Or is this really just not a big deal? It's hard for me to tell because personal reasons encompasses so much.
I think the kind of the tiebreaker for me here is this schedule break, which is because they didn't advance in the NBA Cup.
Right.
So a lot of teams have had kind of this bigger gap. So he's only missed a game, And now he misses this one tonight. So he might get basically like 10 days off for really no reason. My thought is he's like at a beach somewhere, like just relaxing or getting something shot up in his foot because it's that big of an issue.
Like a treatment.
Yeah.
Because it can't be a personal reason that's a family thing because Bronny's still playing.
Right.
So if it was some family emergency, you'd think both of them would be gone. So, yeah, maybe it's a medical thing. Because like even to take a break like this, right? Say you need a break. It's December. The season just started.
But we also just had them talking about, ooh, maybe he's playing too much. And we know he wants to play 82. We need to slow him down. Then he misses a game for a sore left foot. And now while they didn't do anything from Sunday to Wednesday. And then so everyone was off. And then Wednesday, he didn't come back. And that's when JJ said personal reasons. So I just think he's taking a little vacation here.
Maybe he's at the LeBron James of foot doctors again.
Fingers crossed.
Quick trip to Germany.
Wait, so remember we talked about trade scenarios. Like, does this affect his possibly being traded? Because if they're going to, you know, would they want to rest him just so he's fresher for Golden State in the second half?
This is why I can't tell if we're not talking about it enough or if it's really nothing to see here. Like, maybe this is just LeBron, I don't know, just like needing a break or getting treatment on the foot, or this is some weird pre-trade thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I think this is a break, and they're saving the made-up injury for the next time he needs a rest, like in the spring after they don't trade him, and they're getting ready for the play-in tournament.
Got it. Got to keep that knee tendonitis in the back pocket.
Exactly. You want to burn plantar fasciitis now, or whatever. What did you say the new one is? Contusion? You don't believe the word contusion?
Sure foot.
Mm-hmm. Basketball last night, DeMontis Sabonis, 32 points, 20 boards in the Kings, 111-109 win in New Orleans.
20.
The Celtics crushed the Pistons, 123-99, and the Heat handled the Raptors, 114-104. Jimmy Butler, 11 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, while his agent argues with media members about the validity of their trade rumors. Women's number 2 UConn lost for the first time last night, 79-68 at number 8 Notre Dame. Hannah Hidalgo leading the Irish with 29 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists, and 3 steals. In hockey last night, Nashville snapping its franchise record, tying 8-game losing streak, 4-1 in Dallas. The Kings' 6-game win streak ending in Jersey, 3-1. Guys, back to you.
Bogish, thanks so much. Coming up, Perloff and I have some picks to make. We'll do that. Still taking your phone calls, of course, about the 49ers and whose future has more question marks around it, Kyle Shanahan's or Brock Purdy's in the Bay. M&P. Welcome back, Maggie, Perloff, Billy Joel. We're going to make our picks in just one moment. We've been talking a lot this morning about the 49ers. Their season is over. We've been talking a little about Bill Belichick, his introductory press conference. Also, Juan Soto had an introductory press conference yesterday. Less about the Mets, though, and more about the fact that he has not had any conversations with anyone from the Yankees since the season ended. So there was no, like, judge on the phone trying to recruit Soto. There was no checking in with Soto. Like, I think that's kind of a bad job by the Yankees, and I'll tell you why. I know the phone works both ways, and Soto could have also called Judge, but the Yankees brass and Aaron Boone, the manager, they should have tabbed the people closest to Juan on the team and said, hey, can you check in with him periodically? You don't have to mention anything about free agency. Don't put pressure on him, but at least keep the line of communication open, right?
But I don't know, like, how's the dynamic work? Aaron Judge seems just like a quiet guy. Like, are they buddies? I don't know if that's a guy. Maybe there's a guy who's lower down in the lineup who's really friends with him.
Exactly. Aaron Boone should know that. I mean, who was his pal on the team? It's not like it was him sitting at the end of the bench by himself.
You know who his pal is? Whatever dead president is on the $100 bill.
Scott Boras.
I think you're talking about some benchmen.
I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm not a rap star. I don't know what the denominations are anymore. But yeah, no, I think money. I mean, I think the most obvious explanation is money.
Wait, do you not know who's on $1?
Well, I know Benjamins.
Yeah,
because it's all about the Benjamins.
Yes,
but no, I don't know.
Maybe we should be talking bigger, about
what's like the biggest bill? I actually don't even know.
What's the biggest bill?
Yeah, is there anything bigger than $100?
No, Belichick.
No, it's to the hundreds, but they don't like actually give him 100. I don't know.
Yeah. 100, I'm pretty sure, is the biggest one.
Yeah, what am I talking?
Could you get $760 million in, like, I don't even know what that would look like if it was actually in hundreds.
Guy, I feel like an idiot. Of course $100 is the biggest bill, right? Yes, is there definitely. Ever in the history of the United States been a bigger bill?
I think in the history of the United States, there actually was a bigger bill, but it was discontinued or taken out of our... taken out of circulation, is that what they call it?
Why are there pennies? Like, don't get me started on that.
Let's get to our picks, shall we?
Maggie and Perloff's NFL picks.
I'm just thinking, I'm like, is this like a trivia question?
I have the answer.
Whose face is on a $100 bill? We know it's Ben Franklin.
Not that answer.
Okay,
sorry. Biggest bill.
Was there a $500 bill at one point that got taken out of circulation?
There was once a $100,000 gold certificate that is technically the largest note ever printed. 1934.
Wow, and back then, well, that's crazy.
Who had 100 grand back in 34?
Like the Vanderbilts.
500. So the 500, 1,000, 5,000, 10,000 are all still in circulation. You can use them. They don't make them anymore, though.
Whose faces are on those? Do you know?
Oh, God, I have no idea.
Treating you like Google.
You think McDonald's will accept my $10,000 bill?
I'm looking at this man.
As many Big Macs as possible.
I'm looking at him, and I don't know. Who is this man? I can't, my...
No, not happening.
Manny, look, Google $500 bill. There's a stern-looking man from the 1840s on there. Or maybe that's FDR. I can't even tell. Anyway, go ahead.
The wig is powdered, is all we know.
Let's get to our picks. EJ, can you update us on our records?
All right, Miss Maggie's a humble brag here. Didn't mention it once this week. 5-0? 5-0, which makes her record now 41-29 overall.
You were 5-0 last week?
I didn't want to say anything.
Why not?
Because, this is why. Because Perloff always accuses me of, I don't know exactly what, caring too much about my picks. So I sat on 5-0 this whole week.
You went 5-0. That's
amazing.
Just waiting
for this moment.
I can't believe you didn't say anything on Monday.
Also, I really needed a big week. I had been going 2-3 for, I think, 5 weeks in a row. It was dire. Time for me to pull out the big guns.
I know. I was 2-3 last week.
That is correct.
So and that was a killer, too. I've had two bad beats last week, but please go ahead.
Yeah, you were 2-3 last week. The Bengals-Cowboys one was certainly a really rough one. And then I don't know what happened with Boise State UNLV. Just stopped scoring.
They barely even showed up for the game.
Well, first half, it was offense, and then there was nothing happened for the rest of the game. So that brings your total record now to 34-36.
All right. This is some work to do here.
Okay, so obviously the way that we normally do picks, if you listen to the show, we generally do two college picks and three pro. This week, we only have one college game. It's Army-Navy. And Perloff and I love our service academy so much that we couldn't possibly choose sides in this one, right?
I'm picking that game, Maggie. Oh.
I thought we agreed. Okay.
We said dealer's choice.
Okay. So we are going to do dealer's choice. Here's what it's going to be. Two over-unders, two against the spreads, one player prop. Perloff, get us started.
Okay. I'm going to save my player prop for last. But I actually, and I'm sorry, because I didn't know we were not doing the college game. There's also some lower level games. You know, you could put some money on South whatever state. But I'm taking...
I'll get my $100,000 bills right on that.
I want to take Army, if you'll allow me,
sure.
Laying 6.5 points. Because we've watched Army and Navy, like, Army's awesome. That's my simple analysis of this. And I feel like... obviously, this is a big game, as they say. So I'm going to go with that. My other picks, I would like to go, if you'll permit me, with the Bengals. 5-point favorites over the Titans. I feel like we saw some fight in the Bengals last week. Joe Burrow's mad at a bunch of things. And then I'm going to go with the Seahawks in the big game against the Packers. A 2.5-point underdogs. I think Seattle is a good team. You've been actually... You know why? Because of your influence. You've been telling me they're a good team. So I'm going to Seattle, 2.5. My totals for the NFL, Ravens Giants over 42.5 because the Ravens are 16.5-point favorites. So if you do the math, Drew Lock or Tommy Cutlets, whoever is playing, only just give me something. Give me something I'm getting over that 42.5. For my second total, once again, I'm going to lose on the Chiefs going over 43. Chiefs, Browns, Jameis. I feel like Jameis is, I want to bet on Jameis. I just love doing it so much. I'm going to go Chiefs Browns total over 43. I'm going to save my prop. I'll let you go with your picks.
Okay. Okay. So here we go. Lots of NFL, all NFL for me. Give me the, let's go against the spread first. I'm going to go with the Steelers. I'm going to go with the plus 5.5. I know Nick Costo said if I feel like they're begging me to take the points, that's when you actually lay the points. But I just can't get over the fact that the Steelers keep these games close. And even in losses, they keep these games close. So inside of a touchdown, I'm going to take it plus 5.5 Steelers on the road to play the Philadelphia Eagles. For my second against the spread, give me Monday night. The Vikings laying 6.5 over the Bears. Is there anything left with the Bears? I mean, at this point, the coach has been fired. They were terrible against San Francisco. I think they want this season to come to a merciful end. And the Vikings, on the flip side, are just destroying teams right now, right? I mean, they are not destroying teams like every, like,
yeah, they're kind of like
the Falcons. I know
when
they
go on a roll,
went down to the wire. But I just think they've found something here with the Darnold, the two wide receivers, and I don't really think the Bears are going to be able to hold up. So Vikings, and I'll lay the 6.5. For my over-unders, I'll take the Dolphins and the Texans over 46.5. Perfect conditions inside of a dome in Texas and Houston. And the Dolphins can score, and I still think they're going to be able to against the Texans. Mm. I feel like we haven't seen the Texans play in about 2 months for some reason. And also give me the Bucs and the Chargers. I'm going to go under 45.5. The Bucs have been getting into the 20s in terms of scoring, but only against bad teams. So the Chargers' defense, I think, is going to hold up in this game. It's going to be a low-scoring game. That was Nick Costo's upset pick of the week, by the way. But I'm going to take the under 45.5. And for my player prop, I will go to Sunday night. DK Metcalf over 5.5 receptions for Seattle, who is a slight home dog against the visiting Green Bay Packers. Give me a lot of DK Metcalf in this game, over 5.5 receptions.
Ooh, okay, so we're both a little invested in Seattle here. Okay, so there's one prop that everyone's paying attention to this week.
Yeah, and I know exactly what it is.
Well, there's two. You could go with A.J. Brown receptions, yep, or you can go with A.J. Brown yards.
Because A.J. Brown called out the Philadelphia Eagles passing game. So the question is, are they going to overcompensate this week and try to force the ball his way?
So the yards are at 79.5. It's a lot of yards for an offense, especially because Joey Porter is probably going to pass interfere on every single time down the field. And that is why I'm going Alvin Kamara under 74 yards, 74.5 yards rushing the Saints.
So you're ignoring the game completely.
I can't do this A.J. Brown thing. I honestly could not sleep last night because I was thinking about what the Eagles do. There is so much pressure on this situation. I don't want anything to do with it. I just totally went to a different game. I want to bet against the Saints because they're playing Jay Kaner and they're so bad, and I think the Commanders are going to roll in that game. So I'm going with Alvin Kamara not showing up, 74.5 yards. The thing about it is A.J. Brown, 79.5 yards. It seems like the perfect total. Do you have Alina? We should just do a side bet on what happens in that game.
Yeah, so the drama in Philadelphia, very real, between A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts. Brian Graham blasted them, or blasted their
Brandon
dirty.
Brandon Graham, excuse me.
Aired their dirty laundry, blasted the dirty laundry, I should say, out to everybody. And so tons of speculation. I think the betting move there is more on the targets than the yardage.
Yeah. Can I bet targets in my state? I'm not sure.
I think that it's at 5.5 or 6.5, I would go with the over. I think they are going to try to overcompensate, and Kellen Moore is going to try to make a statement here to Brown and try to shut this story up. So to me, I think they put the ball in A.J. Brown's direction a lot.
Yeah, so they will probably try to do that, but it's so obvious. Okay, I don't know. It's going to be hard. I think the Eagles are going to have a tough game, too, because the Steelers are starting to run the ball well. So I think it's going to be a slow game. I think the Steelers are going to keep this really close. What do the Eagles want to do? I don't care how many times A.J. Brown complains. They want Saquon Barkley to control this game. I like your pick of the Steelers, by the way. It's way too many points. The Eagles, we have no idea who they are, how they're going to respond. It's 5.5 receptions.
I think that's an easy over to me.
Oh, man.
He got four last week, and he complained right after the game. So you only need two more targets and catches?
I don't know. I just think that it's like Nick Sirianni might be opposite and be like, you know what? You're going to complain. Maybe
I'm going to freeze you out.
Freeze you out. But also the Steelers are going to know it's coming to A.J. Brown, aren't they?
Yeah, but he's really talented. So I think I would bet
is
on
Jalen
him.
Is Hurts really talented?
Yes.
That is now the big question. Oh, my God. I can't wait. But I'm going Alvin Kamara under for all you bettors out there.
Thank you, DJ Stewart. Thank you to Manny Rodriguez, Andrew Bogish, Andrew Kaplan. Thank you to Andy Staples and Nick Costos, the Weedos and the Coffee Drinkers. We'll see you Monday.